The Brad Sessmatt Show, broadcasting live from the Skyview Network studios.
Thanks for being with us. I'm getting hit up for tickets for the Open. Eric, are you going today? You look like you're dressed for golf. You look like you're...
I will make an appearance out there. I don't know exactly how long I will be there for, but I plan on going out there.
Work? Pleasure?
Not work.
Really?
Maybe just walk around and...
You got a hookup today? You got a suite or something?
I don't.
Just going to take a pass and go in and find your way around?
Yeah, sometimes I just like to walk around the course by myself and...
It's nice.
Take it all in and just think about stuff.
Stuff. Stuff at a golf course? No.
Sure.
I'm going to 16 today.
I don't think I will go to 16, but maybe before the end of the weekend I might make my way out there.
I went out yesterday with clients, and I took my bride with me because she keeps me in check. We walked around the Pro-Am. Have you seen Carson Kelly golf ever?
I have not.
He is really good. I guess his dad worked for Ping back in the day.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, so...
That would make sense that he's probably held and swung a few golf clubs in his life.
Fitz was good yesterday. He was not good on one hole, and then the next hole he was really good. He almost had a hole in one. Just dropped one in about a foot from the hole. It's pretty amazing.
It's cool.
Yeah, it's fun. So, you know, Open Week, we like to get out. You know, I'm going to head out today. I was out there Tuesday. Eric was out there Tuesday for a bit. He's out there yesterday. I'll be out there tomorrow. This is the only city in America where there's a sporting event that has more people's attention than the Super Bowl. Now, Super Bowl Sunday will be the game, and we'll have Jimmy Vaccaro with us in a few minutes. We're going to go to Vegas, South Point Casino Resort Sports Marketing Director, get the last view from Vegas from Jimmy Vaccaro before the Super Bowl takes place. Will this be the biggest handle ever? What's the latest in Vegas on the line and all that stuff? The big game is just 4 days away. Our opening comments are brought to you by Sagicor Now. Protect what matters most. And that is with life insurance. Guys, if you've studied into life insurance, you would know that you could use your life insurance policy to help pay for college. Yeah, there's different ways that life insurance can be used. Many people just use it to protect themselves. If you weren't to come home tonight, if something were to happen that was tragic, all that you love and that you care about, are they protected with life insurance? Log on for your free quote at Sagicor Now. That's at Sagicor Now. We appreciate Sagicor Now and their support. Vanessa Bryant spoke yesterday. We're going to have Kyle Dodd with us in about 20 minutes or so. We're going to put that at 10:35. Kyle Dodd, former ASU guard, now Sun Devil radio analyst. He is in all places that you don't want to be at. For those of you who love Pullman, Washington, I know Eric said to me one time when we've been doing this company, he'd like to go to Pullman. I'm sure he would retract that once he went to Pullman, because it's a haul to get to Pullman. I could give you Pullman stories, but and they might even be more entertaining than the game last night. ASU lost at Washington State, and they lost almost at the buzzer, and there was some mismanagement from what I saw, and it was just one of those games you look at and you say, NIT? Like, they're going to have a long run. At some point, Bobby's team has got to figure it out, because all that they are right now is live by three, die by three. That's it. They died by three in the first half against the U of A. They live by the three in the second half, and they're able to beat the U of A. But, man, if Romello White and Jalen Graham cannot give them things inside, and you're going to have mistakes like Jalen Graham pretty much crapped the bed at the end of the game last night, in my opinion. Was not a good finish on any player at ASU. And so they've got to get better, obviously, but it starts with you've got to find other options than just hoping that Remy Martin's going to hit a shot to win a game for you. Like, I'll give you an example. Oregon relies on Peyton Pritchard. It feels like Peyton Pritchard's been at Oregon for 10 years, and he always seems to come up with the big shot at the end of the game. But you have to have some other guys. You just do. And it's maddening to see them. And that flight, when I was ASU's color analyst, like Kyle Dodd's ASU's color analyst now, I came to Phoenix. I was ASU's color analyst for 4 years. Tom Dillon and I, traipsing around the country. The trip to Pullman, it's a haul. I mean, it's a haul. And when things don't go right in Pullman, Bill Frieder called Pullman a dump one time, the former ASU coach, called it a dump. So, of course, that gets picked up by those little newspapers in Pullman. We show up. They're ready, man. They just have their teeth out. They're snarling. The fans, all 10 of them, are booing and yelling and screaming, and they're all over us. And we lose. I'll say we affectionately because usually I don't say we. And we go back to this one hotel in Pullman, or you could go to Moscow, Idaho. But we're in Pullman, freaking Washington. And we get a knock on the door at 4 a.m., and it's people from the hotel saying, yeah, the airport's fogged in. You have to get on a bus, and you have to go down to this little city. I don't even remember the name of the little city. I get on this bus with Tom, and we get down to this little city. It'll hit me in a second. And there's two other people on the bus, a young guy and a girl. And so there's the four of us. We get on this plane, and they rev the engines because it's a short runway, and it goes into a cavern, not a cave. It goes down off a cliff. You're going off a cliff. So they shoot us out like a rubber band. And it goes, and then it goes down, and then up we go. And we're flying to Seattle. All right, we're going to get to Seattle. And about halfway to Seattle, nope, Seattle's closed, fogged, and we have to go to Portland. So I end up in Portland with these two people on this plane and Tom and I. And we sit around for Portland for 6 hours. And finally, these two people introduced themselves to us, and it was John Olerud, first baseman, New York Mets. And his wife or girlfriend at the time, who was a great volleyball player, both went to Washington State. It was like 12 hours before I was able to get home. It was a haul to get out of Pullman. One time I went to Pullman and Tom's gear didn't show up. It got stolen. We get off the plane from Seattle to Pullman. The case is gone. Stolen. So I don't have great thoughts on Pullman. But I'm sure some of you think Pullman is great. It's not. There's not a reason really to be there. So not only did ASU lose last night, the buzzer, now they've got to sit around for a couple of days because in the infinite wisdom scheduling of the Pac-12, hey, let's send ASU after they play Saturday night at home against U of A. Sunday they're at home. Monday they've got classes. We're going to put them on a plane Tuesday because we want them to be on ESPNU. Eric, do you have ESPNU? I know you don't have Pac-12. So did you watch? Did you watch?
And I do have ESPNU, and I did actually watch it.
Did you make it all the way through?
I did. It was just sort of on. I was doing some other stuff.
It was a car crash game last night.
Lots of turnovers. It wasn't pretty.
Lots of turnovers.
But like you said, that is just that game is more mental, I think, when you go to Pullman than it can be physical. I mean, ASU in football very, very rarely wins when they play in Pullman.
You still want to go, huh?
I'd like to just go once.
I'm not going with you.
I don't know. I wouldn't call it a bucket list, but I would like to see a game in Pullman. I would like to see a game at Autzen. I would like to see a game at UW.
You've never seen a game at Autzen? Are you
not? I can.
Oh, that's right. You're a TCU guy.
I can pass on Corvallis.
You go to these dumpy little places in Texas and see games because there's packed fans and rabid fan bases.
Dumpy little place?
Yeah.
Why would you say that?
I've never been there.
Exactly.
But I've been to Pullman. And I've been to UW. UW's not dumpy.
No.
Reser Stadium, Oregon State. There's a Dutch Bros across the street. It's not bad.
I like that.
Autzen Stadium, crazy.
I'd love seeing it.
It's crazy. Well, I'll get there. Vanessa Bryant spoke about Kobe yesterday, but she did it on social media, and I don't blame her at all. And it was beautiful. It was just beautiful. And wherever I go, or even yesterday out at the Open. Outside of a couple idiot fans yesterday at the Open, that one of them said something to Michael Phelps and Michael kind of snapped back at the guy. It was stupid. It's my little rant. And I know we've got Jimmy Vaccaro, so I'll just get this rant in and out. When you go to golf tournaments and it's a pro-am and then you want athletes to autograph and they don't autograph and they say they'll try to do everything afterwards and it's not good enough for you, you're an idiot. It's not that hard. You think that they can sign 100 autographs. They have to play. And if they're nice and you're still going to say something stupid to them, or you're the guy that says, Phil Mickelson's always been a bad guy and I'm glad he's not here and I hate him, and you're just sitting there complaining about your lot in life. And I had to sit next to that guy yesterday at 7 for a few minutes. I don't know why people just want to hate. There's times, trust me, we're going to talk about Marcus Morris and what a brain surgeon he is a little bit later in the show. But up next, Jimmy Vaccaro, South Point Casino Resort, the latest on the Super Bowl, and then Kyle Dodd. I'm Brad Sussmat. Now let's turn our attention to the Super Bowl. South Point Casino Resort Sports Marketing Director Jimmy Vaccaro checking in from Vegas just 4 days away. What will Super Bowl morning look like at South Point Casino, let's say 10 hours before kickoff? What will it look like? Will it be filled, packed, lines long? What's it going to look like, Jimmy?
You hit everything, my friend. Quickly, I'll give you an update. The money's been back and forth the past 18 hours. It's just incredible. I know we're going for an all-time record. We're right now the Chiefs minus 1.5. The total down a little bit to 54.5 from 55. Money line $1.25. And to answer your question, my friend, complete mayhem. Every year it keeps getting bigger and bigger. Just look at it this way, Brad. From Saturday afternoon until kickoff Sunday, we'll still take about 90% of the action will come in starting Saturday afternoon. And it's just incredible. Here's one for you. Jim McElwain, a.k.a. Mattress Mac, stopped in a couple of days ago. We had a great conversation. He did bet his $1 million at the MGM on the 49ers at plus $1.20. And he came back and we had a great conversation, more or less about legalization of sports betting, how it's spreading. He's a wonderful guy and a great ambassador for his side. He winked at me, says, so I think he's coming back. So it's going to be a monster, monster weekend, my friend.
So you're intimating he's going to come back and drop some with you, perhaps, Jimmy?
He gave me a little wink on the way out the door, but what he was looking for, my friend, was at the price that he wanted, and the MGM had plus $1.20, which was the highest, so naturally he's trying to get the best out of his value also, but I would not be surprised if he stopped back Sunday morning to make a little bet. A little bet to him is like $200,000 or $300,000, but the most important thing, he's a gracious guy and he's good for the industry. Believe me, he stirred a lot of interest for us.
Biggest bet you've taken so far, Jimmy?
Us, we've taken $115,000 bet on the Kansas City Chiefs, and I would imagine we'll probably get four or five more of those six-figure bets at the South Point come late Saturday and early Sunday, my friend. But it's going to be fun. Wish you were here, my friend.
People that are coming up from Arizona, Jimmy, they go to you first and then find their place to stay. I know if the South Point I don't know if there's rooms, or maybe rooms, or may not be, but if they're coming into town, how early do you want them to get in and get it done?
Well, I want them to get in and get it done because, first of all, the newbies, I want them to explain exactly what they're doing so the prop bets at times can get a little confusing, come up. But you know what, my friend, I would just tell your friends in Arizona to call up to South Point. There's always some cancellations that start to come in also, so see if they have rooms. But this I can't tell you. Come up and mention your name. The buffet's on me, my friend.
Wow, look at that. Look at that. We'll let you go off that,
all
Jimmy.
Right.
As always, thanks.
All right, buddy.
Take care. There's Jimmy Vaccaro. Did he just say that? Devin's going. Devin is looking like, you just saw Jimmy. We talked about this last week. But Devin's never met Jimmy. And when Jimmy says, it goes.
I might just drive up, get the buffet, and drive back. No, just kidding.
Marcus Morris. So let's, now that the Super Bowl is ready to go, Marcus Morris showed up. And I have to bring up Marcus Morris in today's show because Marcus Morris, if we go down in terms of players that fans just hated in Phoenix through the years, and hatred, I know, is a very strong word. Fans just despise the Morris brothers for various reasons when they were here, Markieff and Marcus Morris. And Marcus Morris has gone on. He's having a pretty good year. He's 30 years of age. He's averaging 19 points per game. That's a career high for Marcus Morris. He's on a bad team, but he's still averaging points. And he's trying to get through his life in the NBA so he can collect his pension and just say he had a nice career. But last night, Marcus was in a fight, the Knicks and the Memphis Grizzlies. And he was in this deal with about 50 seconds to go in the fourth quarter. Memphis was up 18 at the time. Grizzly forward Joe Crowder stole an inbound pass from the Knicks forward Julius Randle. Knicks players essentially playing no defense. Crowder dribbled to the corner to launch a three. Knicks guard Elfrid Payton clearly thought Crowder's attempt was bad sportsmanship, given the Grizzlies are about to win in a rout. So he went after Crowder with both hands, shoved Crowder to the chest. That caused him to go to the floor. Meantime, players from both benches get into it. Crowder, Payton, and Marcus Morris. And John Morant. So there's this little scrum that happened last night. The referee separated the players. The referees issued a flagrant two against Payton, ejected both Morris and Crowder. Okay? This is with a few seconds to go in the game, to set it up for you. So here's what Marcus Morris had to say about Crowder after this all took place.
Code that you don't go for those plays late like that?
No, the steal was cool. You got the steal. It is what it is. But when you step back and shoot a three, you know what I'm saying, and try to, you know, low-key like rub it in that they're winning, you know, it's just unprofessional, man. It's soft. His game is soft. He's soft. It's just, you know, it's how he carried it, man. And, you know, it's just very womanlike.
Come on. He's soft. He's very soft, very womanlike. I mean, come on. Anybody, like, I don't think in this day and age, you can't just go that far. And this isn't even being PC. It's just, that's just not smart. That's just not smart.
I thought everything he said was fine until the end.
Yeah. He's soft.
That's fine. We hear that a lot in the NBA.
Yes.
We
hear that in sports. Guys get into it. Oh, he's soft. He's this. He's that. But then women like, come on. I mean, come on.
And coaches call their own players soft all the time.
Yeah, they're sending a message.
It's a motivational thing.
But gosh, to say something like that, and he said Crowder was rubbing it in, which I don't, you know, that doesn't bother me. Some people think that he shouldn't have gone that far. I don't think rubbing in is that big of a deal. I think.
And the Morris twins, like, calling out someone else's, I don't know, character and.
Come on.
Game ethics is just, it's just jaw dropping.
No, it really is. That's the thing that at times in sports, when you see stories like this, you could just let them go by the news cycle, and I could talk about Vanessa Bryant and some other angles. But when I saw this, like, you can't say that about women. You cannot say that about women. So that's – and I don't – and of course, within like a half hour on social media, Marcus Morris was walking back his comments. Like, I can't walk back things that I say on here unless it happens immediately. And I would never say something like that. Are there times where you say something and you regret it? Sure, but come on. He went on to say he plays the game in a different way. A lot of female tendencies on the court. Flopping and throwing his head back the entire game. It's a man's game. And you just get tired of it. It's soft. His game is soft. He's soft. How he carries himself is just very womanlike. So the part about a lot of female tendencies, you can't say that. So now what's going to happen? Is the NBA going to punish him? Of course they should. They're tied into the WNBA. And I know it's the Knicks, and the Knicks stink, but it's New York City. Okay? It doesn't matter what city it's in, but when it's in New York City where the league office is for Adam Silver right down the street, you got to take some action. You just do. There's a story that's going to happen tomorrow in town, and then we'll take a break. Remember Lou Dort, Eric? Lou Dort is with Oklahoma City. Lou Dort plays for Oklahoma City. Lou Dort came out early, and there were people, including myself, that wondered, but there were people that went way beyond that with Lou Dort. Like, what is he doing leaving ASU? He's here tomorrow night for Oklahoma City. He's playing a ton. That'll be fun. It'll be fun to watch him. Kyle Dodd grew up in Southern California. Kyle Dodd grew up a Laker fan. Kyle Dodd grew up a Kobe Bryant fan. They're not very far apart in years. And I'm going to talk to Kyle Dodd from Pullman, Washington next about his ties and thoughts on Kobe Bryant. I'm Brad Sussmat. So Kyle Dodd is someone that I've seen play back in the day at ASU. You can follow Kyle on Twitter at K_Dodd, D-O-D-D-3. Of course, he's the ASU Sun Devil basketball analyst. But Kyle grew up in Orange County. Kyle came to ASU as a terrific player, does a great job in describing games. He joins us today from Pullman, Washington, where ASU lost last night. We'll get to that in a minute as the Sun Devil season is going on. But I'm curious from my point of view to you, what you remember growing up as a kid when you heard the name Kobe Bryant as a young basketball player in Orange County?
Yeah, I mean, you know, for me, growing up in Southern California, the Lakers were such a big part of my childhood. I mean, I grew up in the 80s and 90s, and you know, my dad introduced it to me when I was 5 years old. I remember, you know, one of my first memories was, I think I was six, Easter Sunday, and going to watch the Lakers. And then, you know, as that progressed, you know, through the Showtime years, and then you got a, you know, 17-year-old kid that's only, you know, 4 years older than me that joins the team. And, I mean, I remember sitting, remember where I was at, watching him shoot air balls in the playoffs against Utah, and then just watching him progress into the superstar, you know, a couple of years later. And, you know, I was infatuated with him as a player. I studied him as a player. And then, you know, as I got older and I started coaching and training, I studied him, you know, as a teacher and trying to emulate some of the stuff that he did, you know, on the floor. And, just the last, sorry, Brad, the last couple of years just as a father, you know, and then, you know, me being a dad with three little ones trying to kind of relate to, you know, I think it made him real, like a real person. Everybody knew Kobe the competitor and he was a killer. You know, he wanted to step on your throat. He would never let you above water. But then I think people, you know, saw him as a real person when they saw him interact with his kids and coaching his kids. And it was cool. I thought that was even cooler for me as a huge Kobe fan to watch him as a dad, even more than as a player. So I think that's what's really like the tough part of the last couple of days is just knowing that he had so much knowledge to give and that type of stuff. And I mean, I have a million stories that I pass along to my kids and kids that I coach, as far as work ethic. And I mean, I have some really good stories about, you know, and a lot of people have heard that the ones where he's getting up at 4 a.m, but just some really cool ones that, you know, I've had personal experiences with and just awesome.
Why is this story so emotional for you, do you think?
I just feel like, you know, because like I said, it was such a part of my childhood. I shared it with so many friends. I shared Kobe and the Lakers with so many childhood friends, so many family members. And there's a line like in City Slickers. I don't know if you remember that movie with sure. Billy Crystal. When they're talking, they're sitting around a fire and they're saying, hey, you know, when I was 18, I couldn't talk to my dad about anything, but I could always talk to him about baseball, you know? And that's kind of like what I feel. It's like, no matter what was going on in my life, and I always had a great relationship with my parents. It wasn't that, but like, if you were having issues with friends or school or family stuff or whatever, you could always talk about Kobe and you could always talk about the Lakers. And over the last, you know, 2-3 days, as bizarre, I mean, and as tragic as this was, I mean, I've received phone calls and connected with people that I haven't talked to since high school and, you know, 20 years. And people knew how diehard of a Laker fan I was. They were also Laker fans, but people just checking up and saying, hey, man, you know, I remember this time. I remember when you kicked a hole in the wall in college when the Pistons, Rip Hamilton and the Pistons came in and beat the Lakers, you know? So, yeah, I think that's it. I mean, just so many memories, and it's just weird to me because, you know, I experienced Kobe on a personal level like a few times, interacted, but like never really truly like met him, you know?
Where and when did you interact with him? Do you remember?
So I used to see him work out every morning. I was done playing and I took a coaching job and back in Southern California, I was living in Irvine and Kobe used to train at this place called the Irvine Sports Club right off the 405 freeway by John Wayne Airport, prestigious sports club. And, I used to train there and, so he would be in there every morning with Tim Grover, you know, Michael Jordan's old trainer at 6 a.m. And this is one of my stories. I mean, the first time I saw him in there, I'm like, dang, like he's going through a workout that would anybody else I would classify as like an off season. I'm trying to get in shape workout, like med balls, rubber bands, you know, game jumpers, one after another. It's 6 a.m. and I'm like, you know, he leaves and Grover was kind of walking out and a couple of us were like, asked him a couple questions just real quick. And I was like, man, I mean, I just realized they played Dallas tonight. Like they played Dirk Nowitzki in Dallas. Like this is a game day. And he's like, yeah. He's like, he's nuts, dude. He's nuts. He's like, that's what makes him great. And he's like, the crazy part is, he's like, we didn't start here. We were at the UC Irvine track this morning. Mm. And I'm like, that's a game day, you know? And I've talked to trainers. I've talked to, athletic trainers that said, there's no way this guy his knees aren't going to hold up, or he's not going to, he can't work like that. And they said he thought that was BS. He thought he could do it, and he did. And I mean, he epitomized the not wasting a moment, not wasting a day, carpe diem, seize the day, mm-hmm. And that was what I took away and learned, from just watching him from afar.
Did you ever put anything in your game, because you were 13 when you saw this 17-year-old, as you said earlier, did you ever try put anything in your game? Did you wear the shoes? Did you have the number? Did you do all the things that young kids do when they have a player they latch onto?
Oh, yeah. I mean, I think all good basketball players or kids that are trying to be good or, I always tell people the best way to get better is work out and train. The second best way to get better is to watch. And try to emulate. And so I think for me, it was a lot of the footwork stuff. His footwork was flawless. And who did he emulate? Michael Jordan. And, mm-hmm. and that's what I tried to do, And I have six Kobe jerseys,
Six Kobe jerseys.
Yeah.
Yeah. Which ones? Yeah. Walk me through. Yeah. Can you recite all six just while we're sitting here talking? What do you got? What do you got?
So I have the original just gold number 8. I have when the Lakers introduced the Sunday whites back in the day, number 8, I have a throwback blue Minneapolis Lakers they wore a couple times, like I think early 2000s, number 8. I have a regular gold number 24, a purple 24, and a black Kobe Knights 24.
Ever ask him for an autograph?
No, I didn't. I've never...
That's not
Never
you.
Really,
that's not your deal, right?
Yeah. I would have, but I mean, just like it was never the right time, if I had a chance to interact with him one more than just a, hey, hello, hey, what's up, Kobe, I never really met him, shook his hand, anything like that,
When you're in Southern California with Kobe Bryant growing up, were kids in your class emulating him, or were they still in Magic or Michael? Because you know what I mean by this, right? There was the Magic... Yeah. There was the Magic Bird, then it was Michael, then it was Kobe with Iverson and that whole group, Duncan, that whole group that came in together. In Southern California, were they still Magic or were they Kobe? Were they divided?
I think early on in our childhood, obviously, it was all, for me, it was all Magic, that was my favorite player, It would be a tie, even to this day, Magic and Kobe. And Magic, made me love basketball. And then then as kids, we saw MJ come in, and at first I was like, man, who is this bird dude trying to take Magic's thunder, and then as you get in your teenage years, you're like, oh wait, that's the guy. And then, just him with the dunks so then it was Jordan. And I think that's, and then when we were getting into high school is when you saw Kobe emerge. And so it kind of, that was the way, or at least for me, it was, it was Magic first, and then Jordan, and then Kobe.
In the world of training, we're talking with Kyle Dodd, ASU basketball analyst. He's in Pullman today. ASU played last night. They ended up on the short end of the stick. We're talking about Kyle growing up in Southern California and the Kobe Bryant tragedy. His daughter, you're in the training world too, at least you have been. I had heard about her. I had never seen her. I've seen some clips of her at Powerhouse. I've never seen her in person. I've seen clips of her over at Powerhouse working out. Did you ever see her play and the interaction with Kobe and daughter?
I did not, other than just, the stuff on Twitter not just the stuff over the last couple of days, just, I was fascinated by that relationship over the last couple of years. And, mm-hmm. We've all seen the videos of him courtside, especially the last couple of days, they've been all over the place. But I just thought that was so cool because that's where I'm at with my kid. My son, my oldest son is 12 and he's my best little friend. He does everything I do. We do, I coach his baseball team and stuff. And then I have a 9-year-old boy that is, really taken off in gymnastics. And then my 6-year-old daughter is doing gymnastics. And but just I'm fascinated by that. Like, and I think that's where it like hits home to, and I think that's why it's hard for so many people that weren't even Lakers fans. It's just you relate to this guy as on a different level than basketball. So mm-hmm. I think that's the tough part for me, and just knowing how hard he worked, and then you see all these stories that have emerged that, you know, all these things that are, you know, for years, it's like Lou Williams, I think, said last night, he's like, I knew his trick. He tried to make everybody think he was a jerk. And then he's doing all these things behind the scenes. He just didn't want anything, you know, out in the public or whatever. But for all accounts, it seems like, you know, obviously he didn't live a perfect life. He, you know, got himself into some trouble and made some mistakes. But I think we'd all agree that, you know, he became, you know, better for it and blossomed into a great father.
Have you talked to your kids about what happened on Sunday?
Yeah, I did.
How do you handle talking to your kids on that topic and not get emotional because this is one that really impacted you? Or was it you showing the emotion to your kids and explaining, this is why I have tears right now?
Yeah, I mean, I think that was the tough part. And I was pretty strong initially in talking to them about it, and especially my oldest one, because he's kind of like my mini me, in the sense that, you know, we literally sit there and watch old Kobe games on YouTube, or watch the fourth quarter of, you know, the Lakers Dallas and, you know, the Lakers are down 28 in a regular season game and they come back and, you know, Kobe was a huge part of it. I'm not lying. We recently just watched the 60 point game that they replayed, you know, the other night, but we recently just watched that, and we watched that live, but they were younger, like, yeah.
You and your 12-year-old are sitting there watching Kobe games together. That's the impact that he had on you.
Yes, because, I mean, for him right now, I've passed along my love for the Lakers, but for him right now, it's AD and LeBron, and those are his guys, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
And so I'm trying to show him, hey, man, you think AD is long and dominant? Look at this guy, Shaquille O'Neal, okay? And I love LeBron, and LeBron may be, you know, in a league of his own, but let me show you where, you know, what I grew up watching. And so I think that was the tough part. So I was pretty strong talking to them initially, but they could, all three of my kids could visibly see I was upset. And they made me a purple and gold bracelet in their, and so they came over, and my little 6-year-old daughter just said, Dad, I'm sorry you're sad. And I was like, and I lost it, you know? And I was just, then I, you know, tried to explain. I said, guys, this is something that I grew up with, you know, Papa and Grandma, you know, like, we come home from school, we couldn't wait for the Lakers to play. And, you know, and I'm trying to share that with you guys. And I have videos of him in his last game and all three of my kids in Kobe jerseys. And I took video because I thought it was the coolest thing ever. You know, they were all younger at the time, but they were all on video sending the message like, I love you, Kobe Bryant, you know? And
wow.
So I mean, that just, yeah, it was it's weird, you know, it's definitely surreal. And I mean even spend 4 or 5 days and I still, like, the first thing I woke up this morning, I'm like, dang, you know. So
you're in Pullman, Washington today. Their first game is tomorrow night against Portland. You're going to be in Seattle, I'm assuming, tomorrow night with the Sun Devils.
Yeah.
You're going to go try to find a place to watch?
Yeah, for sure. I mean, I think, you know, that's going to be a powerful game. And I think what the NBA has done over the last couple of days with the tributes, and I think it's, you know, like, in a weird time in this country, you would never say that you needed this, because it's obviously, and like, well, I'm talking about it, I mean, obviously the 9 losses are, you know, heartbreaking, all of them,
yep.
You know,
yep.
And nobody needed this, but it has been amazing to see people, especially in Phoenix. I mean, like, people hate me because I'm a Laker fan, like, I mean, not hate me, but like, I remember, you know, friends that just could not stand the Lakers or Kobe, and just to see people in Phoenix area.
I told Eric this week that, and I'll let you go off a couple more minutes, but I told Eric this week, I said, the guy that I want to talk to is Rajah Bell. That's the guy I want to talk to. And as a Laker fan, I think you can appreciate the reason why. It wasn't just the clothesline. It was it's either Raja, Amari, or Nash. But Raja in particular because of the clothesline.
Yeah.
That's the tie to Phoenix.
Well, yeah, I mean, that's 100%. And while you said Amari, I mean, that's one of my best Kobe stories. Amari Stoudemire was running a camp in Arizona Premier, which I moved out here to help run once Russ Pennell left. It was a training facility in Mesa. And we were running training, and Amari Stoudemire did one of his Nike camps there. That was like one of the five Nike camps when it was like Amari, Darren Williams, Chris Paul, you know, I think LeBron had one, and then they had one big Nike one, and a bunch of kids. And we were just watching. We weren't like training. They had other people come in, and the kids got a question and answer with Amari. And the first question they asked was, Kobe or LeBron, who's better, you know? And Amari's like, well, I'm not going to get into this debate about who's better, but he's like, you know, and I could barely hear him. I was in the office, and I was trying to, like, hear this because, I'm like, oh, I want to hear it. And something along the lines of, I'm not, you know, it's no secret that we all had career years this year. And when he said, you know, by all, he meant Darren Williams, Chris Paul, Amari Stoudemire, LeBron, Carmelo, you know, D Wade. And he's like, and what I mean by that is we just spent the entire summer at USA Basketball with Kobe Bryant. And we thought we knew how to work, but we didn't, you know, and we thought we were working hard, but we weren't. And he told a story about trying to lift weights. They were practicing at 9, I think, or something like this. And if the details aren't right, I apologize, but something along the lines of they're practicing at 9 and he was going to go lift at 6, just one random morning. It's like, I'm going to get a lift in. So he walks in the facility, sees Kobe in there, and he's like, oh, sweet. You know, Kobe's going to lift too. And he goes over, he's like, you going to lift? You know, are you getting ready to lift? And he said, Kobe said, no, I just got done. So Amari's like, wow, like, dude got in here at 5, you know? So Amari, you know, in his head, he's like, all right, well, I guess I got to, you know, I got to lift at 5 if I want to lift with Kobe. So next day, Amari gets up and goes in there and to get up at 5. And the door swings open and Kobe's walking out. And he said, we could do this all week. You know, like, you're not beating me in here. And
that's a great story.
And, you know, and I don't know if the exact details of that are right. I was, like I said, I was listening through an office, but I was asking one of the trainers, I was like, is that what Tati said? You know? And they were like, yeah. I mean, so, I mean, whatever the times were, whatever, it was just basically Kobe knew in his head that Amari was doing that. And he was, you know, I'm not going to let you outwork me. But and then apparently he went and said, you can live with me, but it's not just going to be one day. You know, it's not going to be here or there. Like, you need to commit to this all summer, you know?
That's awesome. That's a great story. I'm going to let you go off that. And, you know, in terms of the basketball team with ASU, we can talk about that another day. But I wanted to have you on to talk because I know how passionate you've been. I appreciate you working through it a couple times during the last 15, 20 minutes with your emotions. And thanks again, Kyle. Safe travels.
Thanks, Brad. Anytime, man. Love you guys.
Take care. There's Kyle Dodd. It's not about ASU losing at the buzzer to Washington State and Pullman. Cares. I mean, it's one game in January. We are, as always, online at sports360az.com. Devin Henry is our chairman of the board. He did not screw up today. Eric Sorensen is our senior executive vice president of nothing or everything, depending on the day. Make sure you head over to the website and check out our content at sports360az.com. Have a great day.